You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com.
It's Sunday, June 24th, 2012, and this is episode 73 of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast with, from BladeBunny.com, Eric Kimball.
Greetings and salutations, Internet.
From EvilSpaceCat.com, Marie Terry.
Hello.
Our news editor, Jason Strasberg.
Hello, new friend.
And I'm Thomas Revoir from 910 Comics. That's 910CMX.com. Let's go ahead and take a look at the news. Our top story today, covering the past 2 weeks since we had a little bit of a vacation last week. Yay, vacation. Is the ongoing story of TheOatmeal.com and FunnyJunk.com with a story that is anything but funny. Pitiful, yes. Funny, no. And I'm going to hand it off to Jason, excuse me, to, I can't tell anybody's part. You all look the same to me today. Over to Eric and Marie. Eric, you're the one who found this story. You go ahead and take it away and let's hear what's going on with them.
All right. So we're talking about an ongoing struggle between Funny Junk and Oatmeal, and strap in because you've got a lot of crazy to go through here. This whole story starts off in about 2010 when Inman posted a page complaining about Funny Junk's process of stealing images from his site. Inman, the creator of TheOatmeal.com, which is a popular webcomic famous for cat versus internet and other very memeable comics. Well, his comics are showing up on a site called Funny Junk, which is basically an aggregator site where individual users post their own images. Many of the users were posting his images claiming to be the creator, even though they were not. Inman complained about the practice of the Funny Junk allowing these posts to go up and that they were making ad revenue in a kind of long statement. This produced a response from Funny Junk. Marie?
In response, Funny Junk admins sent out a letter falsely claiming that Inman is trying to shut down the site and telling users to spam his Facebook page.
After that, after weathering the storm, Inman was able to turn the rage back onto Funny Junk when he basically said, dudes, I'm not doing this and the admins were lying to you. Funny Junk lost a lot of readerships because of this incident and the loss in trust in the site.
So this month, June 2012, almost a year after this whole original incident happened, Charles Carreon, is that how you say his last name? Carreon? Okay.
Carreon.
The new legal counsel for Funny Junk sends a cease and desist letter to Inman, basically demanding that he take down his blog post that complained about Funny Junk and basically accused him of libel. And they want, and also to add insult to injury, they want Inman to pay Funny Junk $20,000 for the business that they lost.
Okay. In response, Inman, being a humorist, posts the letter online, eviscerating the letter, showing all the logical errors. He then goes on to say that he is not going to pay them the money. Instead, he is going to start a charity fundraiser on Indiegogo. The charity will benefit the American Cancer Foundation and World Wildlife Fund. He says at the end of the charity drive, he will send a picture of the money he raised to Funny Junk along with a picture of Funny Junk's mother molesting a bear.
And what's the name of this charity drive?
It was Bear Love Cancer Bad. Bear Good Cancer Bad Charity Drive.
And of course, the internet explodes.
Yes.
Much rage is focused at Funny Junk and his lawyer, who really doesn't get it.
Yes. And the interesting thing is upon learning about this, upon this going bad on the internet, Funny Junk, the admins immediately remove all traces of themselves from the web. They take down all contact information. They shut down any contact form. They ban and delete any poster who talks about the incident on their site and make absolutely no statements at all. They basically throw the smoke pellet at the ground and disappear. Carry on. on the other hand, does not take these actions and continues to make statements to Forbes and MSNBC about how he's in the right.
And because Carrion did not know how to, it's basically duck and cover, as Funny Junk did, and got slammed by the full face of the rage of the internet because he just didn't know what was going to happen, apparently, is now trying to find some kind of way to take legal action against Inman of the Oatmeal, blaming him for the backlash of the whole interwebs for the retardedness that was started.
Okay. This brings us to June 15th, and this is where it gets worse. You thought it was bad before. On June 15th, Inman files a suit, Carrion files a suit as himself, not representing Funny Junk, against Indiegogo, the American Cancer Foundation, World Wildlife Fund, and a currently unknown individual who harassed him on Twitter on charges of charity fraud, cyber vandalism, and hacking. This needs to be repeated. Carrion sued the American Cancer Foundation and World Wildlife Fund, not because they did anything, but because they might get money from people on the internet who he does not like. And that was the sole basis of him naming them in the suit.
And paradoxically, not torn to pieces by an angry mob, same fellow stated that he hopes this to be a landmark case in clearing up online fundraising and defamation, not because he's trying to punish Inman.
All right. This takes us to June 22nd before this broadcast. The Electronic Frontier Foundation, a foundation promoting free speech, has stated that they are joining Inman in the fight against Carrion. This law is the director, Corey McSherry, states that this lawsuit is a blatant attempt to abuse the legal process and punish critics. We are very glad to help Inman fight back.
And at the time of this recording, Inman's charity drive on Indiegogo has raised over $212,000 and has over 14,000 backers. Holy crap.
And this is where we stand at the end of this week. We will see how things can possibly get worse. It doesn't seem like it could, but that's what I thought last week. Back to you, Tom.
Oh, boy. As you can tell, we are definitely going to have a few things to say about this in our discussion period. But there are many links about this. Most notably, we've got a link over at thewashingtonpost.com and over at mediapost.com. We will have these links posted up in our show notes. And now let's get back to something at least a little bit saner. But let's take a look at our buzz with Jason. Jason.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. The nightmare is over. Wow, that was shocking and bad. Okay, we have two stories for Buzz this week, starting out with a story from The Beat, where we're directed to Nat Gertler, where he's posted a chart on movies inspired by comic book properties. It shows that in 1982, when creator-owned properties became mainstream, they basically took over. There are a lot less creator-owned properties published by the big three, which would be Archie, DC, and Marvel, which makes a lot of sense, but still, they became more prevalent. And beyond 1982, the article doesn't really give us much more in-depth, but it just shows us that that happened. It's good food for thought. Check it out. And it just shows where the kind of a sea change happened. All right, and then our second story is from Oz and Ends via Robot 6, where we have something concerning Ray Bradbury. It seems that I think back in the 1950s, EC Comics lifted two of Ray Bradbury's stories, put them together, and made them into a comic of their own, and they assigned the attribution to their house author. Well, Bradbury responded very professionally with a letter stating that EC had forgot to issue a check to him for the use of his stories, and that if he would like to, they can check out some of his other work, and he'd be happy to share that with them as well. In a postscript, Bradbury recommended that the editor check out his books and stories, and then offered to send copies. I'm sure that the editor was pleased that he wasn't facing a lawsuit for copyright infringement, and it looks like EC paid the suggested fee, and then they actually went further to license more stories with Bradbury. And that's really it for Buzz this week. Back to you, Tom.
Thank you. There's actually a long story about the noted author of the EC story, Al Feldstein, and a bit of a problem between him before with Bradbury and the person who brought Bradbury to the general public, the late DC editor Julie Schwartz. You can find more information about that elsewhere as well. But let's go ahead and take a look now over with Marie at what's happening in the business world.
Thanks, Tom. There's three articles in business today, and the first one deals with online advertising coming to us from GigaOhm.com. Basically, the article looks at the perspective of online advertising from a fellow who was in the online publishing industry and left in 2004 and then came back. It looks like really it's a lot of things. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Still debating the value and effectiveness of banner ads, looking at the quantification of the ads through Nielsen or Comscore or Quantcast, discrepancies between agents and publishers' ad services. Mobile is still the next big thing. It goes on in quite a bit of detail, looking at how things have changed and how things stay the same. So if you're interested in that, there's a link in the show notes. The next article talks about Square. Square, if you're not familiar with it, is a point of purchase, mobile point of purchase gizmo that looks like a little square, and you swipe your card through it and allows you to do point of purchase with credit cards if you know you're on the road or whatever. It works with your iPhone or your iPad, and it looks like Square has gotten into a loyalty program for its merchants to try to help flesh out some of their business offerings. They're still growing and they're still looking to fill out their offerings for merchants, and they've offered this reward program. The details of the reward program are on the article, which is also comes to us from GigaOhm.com, and the link is in the show notes if you want the finer details. Of course, they're still not in Canada, so I'm still annoyed with them. The last article in our business section, it talks about Comixology's sales numbers. And that's coming to us from robot6comicbookresources.com. And it, basically the article is telling us that the challenge with digital comics, of course, is to find out how much they are actually taking of market share. And apparently, according to the article, Milton Grape, estimated that the total value of the digital comics market is $25 million in 2011. And apparently, if that is the correct figure, then Comixology has the lion's share of it at $19 million in gross merchandise value in 2011, which is what the figure of the article is. And they figure that it's supposed to go all the way up to $70 million in gross merchandise for this year. It's a pretty short article, but if you're interested in these sort of numbers, it talks a little bit about how many comics have been downloaded, and basically goes on to say that if these numbers are in fact correct, then Comixology accounts for 80% of the digital comic market in 2011. So that's pretty much all that there is in business. So back to you, Tom.
Thank you, Marie. And at this point, we're going to go ahead and take our first break. Let's go ahead, and while we're taking a rest from all this craziness, why don't you go ahead and listen to some of our wonderful commercials, and we'll be right back right after this.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter for news links as we find them at WebcomicZ. Email us at webcomicbeaconnews@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. Love the show? Please grab the iTunes or RSS feed. We are also on Stitcher.com with Stitcher Smart Radio. an on-demand service where you can stitch podcast and radio show feeds together for your own personal streaming service. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic books, news, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. Let's go ahead and take a look over at what's happening elsewhere in the legal world, over with Eric. Eric, this first story sounds like a bit of a riddle. Why are websites like libraries?
Why are websites like libraries, or why are they not? About.com goes through the argument of why websites cannot be considered libraries, even if they don't connect revenue. If you're not familiar, this is an argument among scandalization sites and other sites that host copyrighted material online but don't have banner ads. For example, a site owned by one Mrs. Carrion is one of these, but this is the idea of having a site that doesn't collect revenue and calling the site a library. About.com goes through four sort of key points of why you cannot consider a website a library, and this is written by a librarian. The first one they say is libraries aren't free. They're paid by community members. So when you get a book out of a library, you actually have paid through it through taxes and other sources. The second issue that it tells is libraries only provide one copy at any given time. They don't flood the market with free copies, undermining the sales of the actual publisher. Third item they talk about is libraries lend for a limited amount of time. They do not give things permanently for free, which a website does. Fourth item they bring up is visiting a library supports a community organization. Going to a website supports nothing. And the fifth one is libraries are protected under copyright law. Websites are not. And if you have a website and call it a library, it doesn't give you the legal protections. This is coming to us from about.com, and it's actually a pretty good article for About in general. Our next item in legal is talking about government censorship. Government censorship is increasing by 103%, according to Google. Google released a report today that showed the U.S. government has increased its DMCA, that's the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, takedown requests by 103% from the previous year. Now, it does state that the U.S. government has not asked to take down anything that would be considered censoring free speech, but there are places such as Spain, which are democratic governments who have asked to take down things that are associated with free speech. The requests come from both democratic and totalitarian regimes, and Google does admit a majority of them are legal takedown requests for material that is violating copyright and other items. However, there is a concern being raised that Google is being set up as the sole defender of free speech, and Google is a private company not beholden to anyone except their shareholders. The third article we have coming to us from GigaOM is written by Joshua King. Joshua King also is talking about free speech, and it talks about three things you can do to protect free speech online. The three things he suggests to protect free speech online is retain anonymous comments. This allows people to speak their mind and have it and avoid punishment from large government agencies. Support laws that actually support existing online forms. And he cites the Digital Millennium Copyright as actually a good act as a good thing in here, because there were provisions in that act that allowed the flourishing of online forms and protection of the speech on those online forms, such as Yelp. The third thing he suggests is support anti-SLAPP legislation. And SLAPP legislation is legislation that allows someone being sued for sued to file a countersuit saying that the suit is solely aimed to censor their speech. For hypothetical example, if someone sued the American Cancer Foundation, the American Cancer Foundation could turn around with an anti-SLAPP suit saying you're only doing this to censor free speech, forcing the suee to pay all legal fees. So it goes through and talks about those three items, and it's a pretty good article and goes through the details on that. That's it for legal, Tom. Back to you.
Terrific. Let's go ahead and now go over to our education division with Marie.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. We have three stories in education today. The first story is coming to us from bleedingcool.com and from the original source at cnet.com.au is a look at collaboration in comics, the now and the then. So what used to be like to work with artists around the world for an editor or for a publishing house and what it's like today. And it's very interesting because if you've been in that world when you had to actually get and go to a post box and put photocopies in the mail and send them to somebody and then wait and then get a letter back or a phone call that could cost you a lot of money from an international person, or you had to wait for contracts and all that sort of thing. It's definitely become a much smaller, much more efficient world now that there is broadband and is you don't have to wait a million years over your 28K modem for things to download. It's definitely an interesting look at how that process has evolved and how it has changed and the challenges that are still inherent in working with people around the world. So I would highly suggest this particular article to read it, especially if you're sort of interested in collaboration with artists or writers or publishing house and sort of what the challenges still are, including stuff like digital downloads and distribution and promotion. It's actually quite a broad article, and it's a pretty good one. But the link is in the show notes, and I suggest that you read the article in its entirety. The second article in our education section is what to consider in a digital marketing plan. There's actually two parts to this particular article. There's an earlier part in this series. It's on editorandpublisher.com. And it basically talks about sort of the different vectors that you want to address when you're looking at marketing your website or your digital product, talking about various large things. Some of them won't apply to webcomics if you're looking at marketing your webcomics, but obviously your website design and hosting is very important. Things like search engine optimization, reputation management, mobile site hosting, social marketing, direct marketing. If you have products, deals and coupons might be worth looking at for you. It's things like search and social advertising and having the appropriate analytics to basically determine what is and isn't working for you. Our final article comes to us from tubefilter.com and is a collection of tweets by Emma Coates and David A. Price, I believe, who work at Pixar, who are giving suggestions for some of the most some insightful ideas on the essence of storytelling and sort of story ideas that are made into a list of 22 items. Some of them are a little more formulaic. Some of them are a little more advicey. Some of them are suggestions on what your character should do or what you should do as a writer. Some of them include that number one, to admire a character for trying more than their successes. Number two, you got to keep in mind what's interesting to you as an audience, not necessarily what's fun to do as a writer. And apparently they can be very different. Trying for theme is important, but you won't see what the story actually is until you're at the end of it. Now go back and rewrite it. It's quite a lengthy list, and it's got some good nuggets of advice and insight. So if you're interested in seeing some workings of Pixar people's brains, go ahead and check out the article, which is in the show notes. Back to you, Tom.
Thank you very much, Marie. And I read those 22 notes. Even for experienced writers, they do have some good suggestions in there for questions to ask yourself as you're creating your stories. Let's take a look at some of the stuff that's happening in the tech news. Our only story today comes from us over from our friends at GigaOM, of course. As we've talked about before, starting early next year, they are going to be having new top-level domains. So no longer will we have just the standard .com, .org, .net, .ca, .jp, .whatever. You will actually be able to get your own top-level domain, such as .apple, .google, .dogs, .jobs, whatever. And it gives a little more information about it and who's going to be doing it. To do it, it's going to require an application with a non-refundable fee of just a little pittance, just $185,000. And that's just the application. That's not a guarantee to do it. If you do get it, then it will cost an additional $25,000 every year to keep that top-level domain. Makes .com look so much better. And with that, let's go ahead and go ahead over to our next section, which is going to be our tidbits. Jason, what's happening with our little tidbits?
Thanks, Tom. There are several little tidbits this week. We're going to start out kicking right into it with Feline. We've been off a week, so the story is from the week before. Feline has gone through and broken down 39 webcomic Kickstarter projects. His goal was to look at all of the prizes or the different levels of contribution and what you can get for that and try to figure out what that sweet spot is for who will donate the most money. Your mileage may vary. If you want to take a look through his numbers, he also takes it's a pretty broad spectrum here, so it's a long read. You take a look at it, but you have to really dig through it for any really good nuggets of information. Next up, from Robot 6, we were told that the creator of Womathology, Renee DeLiz, was hospitalized. I believe it was with pneumonia. She because of healthcare costs, and I don't believe that she does have health insurance, they are setting up different places where you can make donations to help her out. Take a look at the article, and you can find links to making donations there. Next up, from Comic Book Resources, this was found via Henschling on Twitter, a comparison between how comics are currently running in parallel with the way that jazz music developed in the last century. It's an interesting article. Go take a read. It's some food for thought. Let's see. Next up, from Cinema Blend, we're told that the upcoming Penny Arcade, I believe it's an RPG game, has been delayed. It was originally going to be on Xbox. So if you were chomping at the bit to play that, you're going to have a little bit longer to wait. And then our last two, from Drunk Duck, we see that volunteers are going to be needed for the Drunk Duck Awards. If you go take a look at their site, it looks like they're going to be needing help, general tasks, or if you want to make a presentation comic for the award ceremony or judge, or you could make a four-year consideration comic for them. Those are the things that they're looking for. Check out the link and show notes and see if you can help out. Finally, it looks like Spider Forest is open to new applications. So that is a webcomics collective. It looks like they're looking for new members to join up. So take a look. And that is the end. All right. Thanks a lot. And here's Tom.
Thank you, Jason. I want to go ahead and add one story into the tidbits. And that is recently comics writer Robert L. Washington III, who is best known as the co-creator of DC Comics hero Static, had passed away at the age of 47. However, he had undergone some serious financial troubles towards the end of his life. And they are having a bit of a problem raising funds to give him a proper burial. If you go over to Hero Initiative, which is very well known for doing a lot of charities like this, they are having a fundraiser for it to help give him the burial that he more than richly deserves. So go ahead and stop over at Hero Initiative. That's going to be over at heroinitiative.org. And please donate to help give something like this. There are too many people who are in need for things like this in the comics industry, and it's good for us to help them out. But on to something a little bit more cheerful. Let's go ahead and take a look at some of the oddities that we have in the comics world with our own oddity, Eric.
Yes, we're doing the oddities week this week, and they are glorious. Our first oddity comes to us from DeviantArt. DeviantArt user Pale Cardin gives pictures of Angry Bird cosplay, which are just wonderful, where you have a number of women dressing up as Angry Birds, matching their color and their appearance. Definitely something to look at. Next oddity we have here is coming to us from The Escapist magazine, and this is This is Swede Anders Ramsfeld, an artist, has gone through and recreated Blade Runner, the entire movie, as a series of watercolor paint portraits. There is a preview on there, and it is just beautiful. Recreating the entire movie as watercolor portraits and then stringing them together for an entire movie. Last oddity we have here is George Takei will guest star in Archie's Kevin Keller comic, which I think officially means that Archie Comics wins. And that's the oddities for this week, Tom. Back to you.
Oh, my. And with that news, we're going to go ahead and take our second break. We'll be right back with our discussion portion of the program right after this.
This is the Fump.
You have a beard and you're wearing a tie. There's really no reason why we can't be men friends, men friends, men friends, men friends.
Then I see this big guy in a hockey mask. It's Friday, Friday, gonna get killed on Friday. Everybody's hacked a band, they're bleeding, bleeding Friday.
Oh, oh, you rich mother...
That's the Funny Music Project at thefump.com. thefump.com.
Welcome back to episode 73 of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. It's time for our discussion period. And with us today are, from BladeBunny.com, Eric Kimball.
Greetings.
From EvilSpaceCat.com, Marie Terry.
Mew Mew.
And joining us today from GoblinsComic.com, the team of Terrell Hunt.
Hello.
And Danielle Stevens.
Hi.
Now, before we get to our discussion period, Terrell, I'm told you've got something to say in response to something that I've said back in one of our previous newscasts. Let's go ahead and hear what you've got to say.
Okay. In the news of me, I just like to say in the news. It makes it sound more official. Okay. So when you guys asked me to appear on the podcast, I was very excited, and I started checking out previous episodes to get an idea of how you guys work. And
that's
I
where
came
you
across,
went wrong, by the way.
I came across, okay, you guys started talking about the time I pulled Goblins out of the top web comics list. I made a blog post about this. And the reason I did this was to make room for other web comics. I mean, top web comics, as you guys mentioned on the April 29th podcast, the top web comics is it's a great place to pull in more traffic, and it's invaluable for newer web comics, for pretty much anybody. And so I pulled myself out of there, sort of following suit. Other web comics have done that. Order of the Stick has done it. Phil Folio did it with Girl Genius. They just sort of pulled their names off the list to make room for other web comics. And so I did this sort of in support of the genre. And I was amazed, Tom, I got to bring this up. I'd be disrespecting myself if I didn't bring it up. You referred to me as self-serving with this action. And I have to publicly disagree with you that I don't think it's self-serving. I think it was it's in support of others, of other artists. It was the reason why I did it. Does that,
Tom?
Yeah, well, I'm here. I'm waiting. Primarily,
Tom rebut.
you called it self-serving, and then you said you sort of like. In a sort of a parody quote of me, you said, let's see, I've got it written right here. Now that we've lost it, we're leaving, which is not the case at all. You sort of made it sound like I was like, I'm in second place. I'm out of here, which is not, you know, not the case. And it wasn't a move of like, I'm so awesome. I don't need top web comics anymore. It was just a move that I want to support other web comics. I want to support the genre. And it was also you guys sort of painted it in a light that that made it look like either I don't realize how valuable Top Web Comics is for pulling in traffic, or that I think I'm above it. And neither of those are true. It's very valuable. And it's not that I'm above it. It's just that I'm a big fan of web comics and I want to see them grow like entirely.
Well, yeah, never so let there we have it. Never let it be said that I'm not the bigger man. I accept your apology.
Well,
okay, good.
Hey, in my defense, I did say I thought I didn't think this was a good move simply because it's very valuable. And my personal opinion is you were being too nice. I think you should have stayed on there. I think you should. That's money on the table, and I think you should take it.
Well, but, and everybody knows. I mean, I've said here before and in public life, what I think of Top Web Comics, that I think that TWC is very much slanted and heavy, especially with a lot of the shenanigans that go on behind the scenes. Now, you'll notice that I never did accuse Goblins of that. I didn't have any information one way or the other for that. But the way that it did come across as self-serving. If that was not the way that it was intended, I hereby retract what I was saying. I have seen many instances of things like that that were done. It's completely self-serving, but if you say that it's not, I will accept you at your word for that.
I think just the fact that Terrell is willing to come on here and talk about it, I think he has proven his point that he just supports the community.
Either that or he wants more free publicity from me disagreeing from him.
No, because then he would have goes back to the self-serving on Top Web Comics, Tom. That doesn't make any sense.
Tom, can I ask you a question?
Absolutely. In all honesty,
did you read my blog post about it?
I don't read my own blog posts.
So you did not. So you called it self-serving. You made at least three negative comments about my actions, and you
I did have read the blog
not
post.
Read the blog post.
I did read the blog post, and it did seem. I'll be honest. I mean, a lot of it comes from a bit of cynicism that I have on my own point. It did seem to be a bit of false humility there. Like I said, if I read that wrong, I will offer my apologies for that. But I also have said that there are many other cases where things like this have been done for a more cynical light, for a more self-serving light.
So,
well, would you say that Rich Belew of Order of the Stick, Phil Folio of Grill Genius, when they pulled out of the list, would you say that's false humility or self-serving?
I'd have to look a little more into it, but I would say very possibly.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, because the thing is, if Order of the Stick and Grill Genius had stayed in the list, then it would be Order of the Stick and Grill Genius number one and number two spot still to this day, and that would be indisputable. Meaning all the other webcomics would not be able to reach that point. They just can't compete with Order of the Stick and Grill Genius. So these guys stepped back, and now all these other comics, like Goblins, could move in and get a taste of that first spot, get a taste of the traffic, the emotional sense of accomplishment, like the whole, it's all smiles. You're like, I'm number one. That's awesome. And then, so, you know, I want to do that same thing. And I would hope that basically everybody would do this. They'd be like, wow, I'm in the number one spot most of the time. It's time for me to step down and let somebody else do that now.
I'll be honest. I mean, I had the same reaction when I read Folio pulling out of the Hugos. So I mean, It does come from a bit of cynicism, but it also comes from a bit of, you know, I'm so bad, much better. I mean, I know I'm going to keep winning this thing no matter what anybody else does. So I'm going to step back. It does smack of arrogance.
Tom, there's a
really
difference. Tom, I got to bring you to task here. And because there is a difference between leaving when you're on top and saying, okay, time to make room, and saying, I know for sure I will always win this. I don't think that anyone can say – no one would say they were always going to win it. That's insane. Eventually, Girl Genius will not be an incredibly popular comic. Eventually, Order of the Stick will not. It may be years, but
– and eventually, they're going to end, and it could be at that point as well. It really does. And they say that it's insane doesn't dispute the fact. I mean, because we both know right after this, we're going to have a story about people who have proven that insanity is rampant in this stuff. So, I mean, like I said, this is coming from my own perspective.
Yes.
And this is the way that it strikes me. Whether or not that is actually what is being done, this is the way that it appears. And as politics have shown us, especially in recent months with the election coming up, the truth doesn't matter. It's only the appearance of truth. The way that it appeared, let me put that in the past tense, the way that it appeared did strike me of a bit of arrogance, a bit of condescension to other people. I am glad to know that that is not the case.
I'm really glad, Tom, that you don't have a number one comic on that list, because you would not, because then Goblins would never have been able to jump into number one for a while. And you know.
I think
I don't even put my comic up on Top Web Comics. I mean, like I said, I've got a bad experience from them in the past, simply because of the way that they've handled things in the past and some of the other things as well. I think it's more a situation of, we'll deal with that topic in another time. We've talked about Top Web Comics in the past as well, but it really is a situation.
We remember when we were an itty-bitty little comic with an itty-bitty little readership, and Order of the Stick was absolutely always in the first spot. And we remember how excited we were when they decided they would move on and we had a chance. And that's, we just want to share that with other people.
Well, I think that's I think that's a noble goal. I think it's a little too noble, because I would say if I were in the top spot, I would never let it go, because it's money and I like money. But
and we know how arrogant Eric is, so
yeah.
I have to say that I'm not arrogant. God knows I am. But let's go ahead, and now that we've got that all wrapped up, let's go ahead and go on. We've got about 20 minutes left, which we're going to discuss on our top story, and that is Buddy Junk versus Oatmeal.
Oh, God.
Eric, when you brought this story to us, the first reaction was, okay, it's a story about, you know, somebody stealing content from another site. Terrific. I mean, I love stories like that because it exposes some of these people out there. Then we get into the rest of the story, as the late Paul Harvey would say. There is nobody in the right on this one. I mean,
I think
really,
I think there are people here. I'm going to jump in here because I have been talking to lawyers about this, and we're going to release some recordings of lawyers. Here's the interesting thing: from a legal perspective, Inman should not have done what he did. Because lawyers are just blown away that anyone would take a cease and desist letter seriously. Because legally, the way things work is you start off with the most extreme situation. And that's what Inman was doing. That's what Carrion was doing. He started out with the most extreme thing. Inman was supposed to get in contact with him, and they were supposed to argue down. You know, and that's how the law works. You start off with, you know, I want the world, and you argue down. Now, everyone on the internet thinks about this the other way. Arguments always escalate on the internet. So when they got that letter, they said, he wants to escalate from there because that's already at 11. And people just blew up. So Inman did not take the legally correct way to go, but he did do what is considered the internet correct way to deal with this. He shamed the other party. He shamed it extremely, but you can't really fault a guy for wanting to raise money for cancer and the wildlife fund. I can't see Inman as being the worst part of this situation.
Yeah. See, the thing is, I think it comes down to bullying. The Funny Junk lawyer just stepped in and started bullying Matthew Inman, and they pushed him and he pushed back, and he did it in an entertaining and comedic way, and he did it in a way that benefits two different important charities. So I think he handled himself beautifully. I think it's like superhero like.
I definitely won't say that. I mean, because let's be honest. Again, this is in the legal sense. What Inman did, he had the sympathy, he had the law on his side, he could have done a lot of things. He took the low road. I mean, it started off with some of the things that he was saying on there, and then even the name of this charity collection that he's running, this charity drive that he's running. I mean, I'm sorry, offering up a picture of the Funny Junk admin's mother seducing a bear? In the legal world, that is libel.
I don't think it is. It's juvenile, but I don't technically think that's illegal.
I don't think that's what his mother looks like, so I think he's okay.
Some of it could be carried by parody, but it would all come down to a court battle. And he didn't want to handle it through the law. He wanted to handle it like a schoolhouse bully, a schoolhouse ruffian, I should say, facing up to a bully.
Well, I know that I was following this pretty intently when it first broke out, because I was like, I saw it all on Twitter, and I was like, oh my God, drama, must read. So I was reading it, and he said in his initial post before he posted that stuff that he had talked with a lawyer, like that he had consulted with legal counsel. So I'm not sure if he willfully said, no, I'm not listening to you, and did the thing, but he seemed to be talking to legal counsel before he did it.
My understanding was he did talk to legal counsel soon after he did it, but not immediately. That was my understanding.
More a CYA than a, is it okay if I do this type of thing?
I mean,
now, let's go ahead. I mean, cause I've talked about Inman a little bit. The former lawyer, I don't know what his standing with Funny Junk is anymore. Carry on. I always want to call him Luggage for that. Eric, you take a little more looking into him. He's got a bunch of money. How did he get his money?
Okay, yeah.
This is a story unto itself.
There is nothing good you can say about this man. The more you dig, the worse it gets. Carry on is very wealthy. The reason he is very wealthy is back in the beginning of the internet, when things weren't set up so well, someone registered the domain sex.com. Well, what happened was someone else came in there and effectively stole the domain from them, hacked their password, and took over the account. No one was really dealing with that because at the time, no one really thought domains were important. Carrion took the case and won sex.com back for the original owners. That would sound great. Except immediately after winning the case, he turned around, sued his client for 15% control of sex.com, and won that case. So he won his money by basically saying, I'm not going to accept standard lawyer fees. I want to control your domain, and won that case. And this is why he's very wealthy and it has – and this is how he's gotten his other clients. He leaves out the part where he sued his own client. That's how he got his money, and that's how he has the money to pursue these frivolous lawsuits like this.
And I seem to remember something else about the lawsuit, that he is suing some of these companies about the
oatmeal
because there's a California law talking about representing yourself as a charity or representing yourself from a charity, which is not a case in this. From everything I've seen so far, has basically said that it is a charity drive, not a charity.
Well, no. Yet again, there's no way you can be impartial about this. Under California law, if you are paid to collect for a charity, you have to register under California law. Otherwise, it's an illegal collection for charity. Neither Indiegogo or Inman registered as a paid agent to collect for a charity. Now, if you ever have someone come up to your door and knock on their door and they're saying, we're collecting for the Sierra Club or something like that, those people are paid. And they are part of a registered organization that receives a portion of whatever you give to the charity. You have to register under California law to do that. And Inman is claiming that Carrion is claiming that both Inman and Indiegogo are going to be benefiting from the charity. Indiegogo because it collects a fee, and Inman, he said, at one point Inman stated that he was only going to collect $20,000. He has more than that, so it reads to me like he's going to have a profit out of here. So that's charity fraud.
Well, I know he's already said, like, explicitly many times that he is not keeping a dime and that he's adding more charities as
well. He says that would also be charity fraud. If you add more charity, charity fraud.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's weird too. Like here, I don't think you have to do that. Like people independently raise money and donate it to diabetes or whatever all the time.
Well,
yeah, in BC, you don't have to be registered.
No.
I think. Go ahead.
Okay. I just want to add in, I think like we really have like two extremes. On the one side, we've got Matthew Inman who, and this is my opinion, he's completely in the right. He's been pushed and he's pushing back and he's doing it in a very positive way. But if you look at it legally, is he legally in the right? That there might be a question mark there. Morally, I think he's completely in the right. Now you look at the other side, and Mr. Carrion, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing his name, which is fine with me. He's legally, the lawyer is completely right. I mean, he's covered himself. He's covered every single track he can legally, and he's airtight. Morally, is he in the right? No, not at all. So I think on one side it's pure legal. On the other side, it's pure moral. And I think this is a really interesting way of looking at it.
I won't say pure on either side because there's a lot of blurring going on there. But I will say that I'm probably mispronouncing it, but purposefully Carrion, Charles Carrion, because it's either that or it makes me think of a dead rotting thing.
Yeah, that's what I think.
According to what I looked on, it's pronounced Carrion.
Okay. So for the lawyer Charles Carrion, it really is a situation to where I think he's got his dander up and now he's dug himself a hole and can't get out of it.
Well, yet again, from his perspective, and this is yet again perspective of lawyers, sending out bullshit cease and desist letters is his stock in trade. The point of a cease and desist letter is to terrify the other party so that they immediately call you up and say, dude, I can't pay you $20,000. And then the lawyer says, oh, well. Since I'll be nice, you just have to sign this piece of paper saying everything is your fault and that you will never do anything like this again. And if you do, we immediately get this award.
Which is BS.
And then we'll drop it. And you have to – and but I mean it's the intimidate – it is BS. It's completely a ridiculous way to run a system, but that is the way our legal system runs.
Doesn't make it okay though.
No, it doesn't make it okay.
As I've always said, it's a legal system, not a justice system.
But Carrion is looking at this. This is his stock in trade. If he lost this, if he just walked away, he would never be able to send out a BS letter again. Because he would – I mean, if I received a cease and desist letter from him, I would write back to him, yeah, let me make this deal. You go away and never talk to me again, and I won't post this online. And he doesn't want that to live in that world. Where the person can write back, you never talk to me again, and I won't post this bullshit letter of yours online.
I won't even say that because we don't know what level of crazy he's gotten to. I mean, he doesn't seem like he's down to Jack Thompson crazy. Jack Thompson being the lawyer that had all the video game lawsuits and was eventually disbarred.
Wait a minute, he's suing cancer and he's not at Jack Thompson level?
Jack Thompson was the one that sued the other lawyers and the judges who ruled against him. So, no, he's not quite the Jack Thompson crazy yet.
I'm sorry.
He's Tom Cruise crazy, but not Jack Thompson crazy.
You're suing the cure to cancer. There's no crazier than that. We were talking. We'd call that supervillain, but that wouldn't make a very good supervillain because it's unbelievable.
Yeah, we were reading – if Lex Luthor did this and I was reading a comic book, I'd say that's so fake. Why would Lex Luthor do that? And yet it's real life.
Let's go ahead and put another thing into comparison there. Like I said, I mean, I don't think it's Jack Thompson level, but someone who is Jack Thompson level is his wife. I mean, I've seen some of the posts that she's made on there. She's not just off the deep end. She's dug a whole nother pool.
Oh, his wife is absolutely nuts. She is.
Oh, we're all going to get sued for this.
Well, yeah, fine. I mean, she is calling everyone who disagrees with him Nazis. She says this is just like the Holocaust.
Oh my god!
Oh my god!
Now I'm hoping she does sue me for that because then I can sue her for racial discrimination. I could make that a hate crime.
Well, yeah, I think she thinks because she's Jewish, she can say it. And as a Jew, I find I want you to shut up, please. That doesn't make
sense. I'm a German. I definitely find that offensive.
Yeah, but
anyone who lawsuit to the Holocaust, that's so insulting.
No, she's comparing the internet to the Holocaust. Yeah.
This is, I'm not Jewish and I'm offended. Yeah.
She, like I said, she operates a website that has, here's the funny thing. Both Inman and his wife have posted, very offensive pictures of George W. Bush, of calling him a murderer, of just purely slanderous, and, showing him riding a missile with penises attached to it, And yet, they have posted this on their website. And this is stuff that Carrion himself, the lawyer himself, produced, made this image of George Bush riding a missile with penises attached to it. And yet, the picture of that Inman produced of his mother is just so offensive.
Well, there's over at techdirt.com/user/TaraCarrion, that's TaraCarrion, where she's got an account over at TechDirt, and it's got a listing of the comments that she's left on here. I mean, I'm looking at one that she's got here from June 19th at 5:15 p.m. I mean, she must have dug out her thesaurus of profanity for that one.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's nothing. If you eliminate every nonsense piece of crap in there, I think you've got maybe four words in that particular post. The rest of it, some of it I can't really comment on because I can't get to the context to where it's in. Some of it you don't have to.
Yeah, she's a loon. And one of the conversations was, why isn't anyone in Charles Carrion's life telling him that suing the American Cancer Foundation and the World Wildlife Foundation, basically saying, you want to stop the cure for cancer and shoot Bambi? Why isn't someone telling him that might not go over well?
I'm just speculating, but I think there probably are people telling him like this is a bad move. But in any time you're in a situation like this where there are a lot of people involved, every opinion is represented by somebody. Mm. So for, you know, you've got, I'm sure there are people saying, dude, you shouldn't be suing these people. This is a bad idea. He's also got people, I'm sure, saying, good, you stand up for what's right. You're a hero. And you can choose who you want to listen to, which makes it really easy to go down the path of insanity.
Yeah. Now, I mean, one of the things here's the thing that we can really take away from this. When something like this breaks, we had two sets of people. We had Carrion, who kept on trying to defend himself and just kept on digging deeper and deeper and deeper. And then we had Funny Junk themselves, who, you know what? They did the right thing. They ducked and cover, and they were gone. I mean, it was. I've never seen a ninja vanish executed so effectively.
Oh yeah.
Now I will say, I mean, because amongst the whole thing, it really you're getting through all the bullshit. Excuse my language, folks. I've never seen anything as to the resolution about the content and copyright infringements.
Oh, that's.
I mean, did that ever get solved?
Well, no.
Is Funny Junk still posting that stuff?
Well, currently they have removed all trace of it, and they're being very vigilant of it now.
They've got pages like of my comic up right now.
Yes, they do. don't be careful. Don't complain about that, or you'll have to pay $20,000 for hurting their business. You have to just sit there and take
that. Right? They're in the States.
They are in the States. Yes.
Yep. Yeah. So it's a lot harder to go after the Canadians.
That is true.
But we will go. I mean, like, I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up. I mean, in my opinion, Oatmeal had the right footing, and then they just kind of deteriorated down. Funny Junk, at least they seem to be cleaning up their act a little bit, but it seems to be more reactionary than anything that's altruistic on their part. And Charles Carrion and his wife, I think they've got a nice set of jackets coming in, you know, the ones with the long sleeves that wrap around and back.
Tom, I can't give you the last word on this because I disagree. Oatmeal did the right thing as far as moral standards are concerned. They stood up to someone who was trying to bully them.
They stood up to them, but
the funny junk has done nothing to change their business model. They are ducking and covering right now. In 2 months, there will be absolutely no change. They will continue to be stealing people's content, and they will continue that process. They have no intention of changing anything.
Yeah, and it's a legitimate copyright argument. The argument should be fought out publicly, but different lawyers.
Right, different lawyers.
This is the sort of thing, it happens all over the internet, and it gets ignored because it's such a big thing, but it is actually an important thing.
And since they apparently have money, folks, if you've got your content being stolen by Funny Junk, contact some of the other people having the content stolen by Funny Junk. Start a class action lawsuit. I mean, you could soak them for a bunch of bucks.
Well, Funny Junk, you could.
It's not about the money, though. It's about the attitude of it's okay to take this stuff because it's on the internet.
Yeah. And we've covered those stories, and we all know our opinions on that. But let's go ahead and bring this up to a wrap-up. I want to go ahead and thank everybody for joining us today, starting off with our guests of Danielle Stevens and the other guy from GoblinsComic.com.
Oh, I'll never do this podcast. The podcast is worse than the Holocaust.
Yeah, that being Terrell Hunt chiming in there. As I said, GoblinsComic.com is a pretty good comic, even if they were on top of comics.
Please, Tom, you're embarrassing them. They're acceptable.
I also want to thank our regulars, our news editor, Jason Strasberg, who is back with our news portion, from evilspacecat.com, Marie Terry.
Thank you.
From bladebunny.com, old what's his name?
Also, a totally acceptable comic. Eric
Kimball. And of course, that leaves me. I'm Thomas Revor from 910 Comics, home of a number of perfectly acceptable comics. That's 910cmx.com. Thank you for joining us in, and we'll see you in the funny papers.